This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Friday. Hey, it's Friday. Matt Patrick here today. A little bit later on, Brett Johnson will swing on by, and we'll talk to him a little bit about, he'll actually talk to someone, Peter Callahan from MinPost, and him will sit down, and they'll have a nice little interview. A lot of things, including the snow bait. They're going to get into that as well. Patrick, how are you today, my friend?
Good, good. Had an exciting adventure yesterday. I went up north chasing leaves.
Did you? Where'd you go? Any park in particular? Let me get my notes ready here, okay?
They looked really good in Lutzen.
Right, Lutzen. Now. So you were north. I was out. I double dipped today. I double dipped into the parks. I went out to Lake Minnetonka Park out in Minnetrista. That wasn't bad, but also Elm Creek Park Preserve up in Maple Grove. Mwah! It's starting to look really nice. They're saying the best leaves are north of the St. Cloud area, that if you go up to St. Cloud and go north of that, that's where you're really seeing the good colors this weekend. I would believe it. I've just noticed, especially the further south you go in the metro, there's a real inconsistency to it right now, that you'll see one or two trees that are just spectacular, but it's not the entire forest by any means. And so, as a matter of fact, when I was at Lake Minnetonka State Park regional park today, I was amazed at how many trees were still really green, really green. Have you seen the big inflatable puffballs? Have you seen those?
Yeah, I have.
Oh, gosh. Tons of them over there. Part of me wants to go over and pop one, but I don't want to because I don't want to become like a mushroom person. I don't know what it's going to do to me. Hey, I don't understand how botany works. But I will say that it's those are weird, man. Those are a little bit weird. If you haven't had a chance, I really want to, if I can beg with you, if I can plead with you, these next 2-3 weekends, just if you get the chance, find someplace out and go. And as I am the walking testament of this, find yourself a park. They're everywhere. They are quite literally everywhere. I am amazed. I still am amazed after I started this park venture. And once again, if you don't know the story, what happened is when they shut down the state last year, basically last March, we were asking questions about where could you go? Were the parks still open at least? And people said, well, the buildings aren't going to be open, but the parks will be open. And so I grabbed the kids. We started going out and we started doing hikes in parks. And it ended up being something that was fantastic. It was a lot of great time together with my kids last summer and into the fall, even into the winter. We've did a few of the parks and it was a lot of fun. And we ended up putting a calendar out and probably going to be doing another calendar this year because we've been keeping going out in the parks. And it really has been a treat. And I hope that you get the chance to go do this. But pound for pound, when flowers are blooming, I mean, there are certain times, like you go to the Arboretum, it's spectacular. The Rose Garden over by, say hi to Jim Walsh if you're over there. The Rose Garden over by Lake Harriet, just spectacular at certain times of the year. But if you get the chance, get out into a park with the leaves changing. Mwah! Magnifique. It is. And let's face it, is the football in this state really worth watching at this point? I don't think so. It's not. No interest in watching the Gopher game. No interest in watching the Vikes game. As a matter of fact, you know what I'm doing on Sunday? It's Johnny Appleseed, man. I'm heading for the apple orchard. Love that. One of my favorite things to do every year. I go out and pick out some apples. There is nothing better than grabbing an apple off a tree and yaha, yumbo. I had the tangos last year. Were amazing. The sweet tangos? Oh, who wants to sweet tango with me? Hi there. Delicious. Just delicious. So get the chance, get out, enjoy it, have a great weekend, whatever you got planned. We still have you to get through this show, and until that time, we'll talk with you as well. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I want to start with something from the yesterday's I Am Awake, Native Roots Radio, with Robert Pilot and crew. And if you did not hear the beginning of that show, and Ogema Gnu Ikwe, who occasionally comes on this show, and I'm blessed when she does, she is absolutely magnificent and probably the authority in Native American news in this country right now, just really an absolutely an excellent journalist. And she started her newscast with a story which was about Orange Shirt Day. And if you don't know what about Orange Shirt Day is, it's a recognition of the Native American children that were put into these, you know, reform schools, and they were just truly horrible. And they've a lot of them died. They were not allowed to embrace their culture in any way. And the orange shirt itself refers to a woman. And forgive me, I don't have the name. I want to encourage you, go to the SoundCloud page. You can go listen to Native Roots Radio. If you're not staying and listening through the 6 o'clock hour, you're just wrong. But if you had missed yesterday's show, it's on the SoundCloud page. Go listen to it. It's an exceptional story about this woman who was sent to one of the territorial schools. And as a Native American, and she was very proud. She was wearing her orange shirt. She was excited. She was wearing her orange shirt. She got there. They immediately took it off of her, and she never saw it again. And very similar to the culture, they weren't allowed to speak their native language. They weren't allowed to wear any kind of, you know, clothes which were embracing of their cultural heritage. They weren't allowed to do dances. They weren't allowed to learn anything about their culture. They were thrown into a stifling education system, which was designed to basically just teach them that being Native American was bad and that they should not be that way. And it truly was atrocious. And once again, at many of these schools, there were a lot of dead Native American kids, and we're just starting to come to grips with that. Now, when Ogema brought this story up, she made a point here, which I'm going to be honest with you, made me well up a little bit. Because she said, I mean, there's this mentality that we have that this sort of thing, oh gosh, it was atrocious. But you know what, was it 1890s? More recent than that. Was it the 1910s, Matt? No, it wasn't. 1930s? 1950s? Nope. The woman who the story about the orange shirt comes from is 54. I'm 52. She was 54, which means this happened in the 1970s. Not exactly ancient history. It was happening in the 1970s. It is a god-awful, yet we can, another one we can add to the list, a god-awful moment in American history, in North American history, because of course the Canadians are dealing with this as well. I'm not sure exactly if this was happening in Mexico per se. I, considering the way it was and considering the way the Catholic Church was back then, and once again, when I say back then, the 1970s. Dear Lord. It is a travesty that this was going on. It was an absolute travesty. I think something Robert had said on the show as well is that pretty much everyone who's Native American today, or their parents, or their grandparents, or all three generations, had to deal with territorial schools, had to do with these schools which were designed to basically strip Native Americans of everything that it meant to be Native American. And it truly is a tragedy. And Ogema talked about, all we want is an acknowledgement, an apology, something that at least shows them that the white population understands the gravity of the cultural abuse that happened there. That's all that they're asking for. And it brings up a point I want to make sure we have to address here as white people. And I am a big white guy. I am going to be the first to admit I have benefited from the white society that we live in. When you bring up injustices to either African Americans, Native Americans, generally, the two groups that generally you hear the most of when it comes to apologies or reparations or something of that nature, white conservative guy usually comes up with the following gotcha, because they think they're clever. Well, if you are so sorry to the Native Americans, why don't you just give them your house and walk away, Matt? Why don't you do that? Why, if you feel so guilty, then just give them their house. That's it. Now, I'm sure the Native American tribes would appreciate if I gave them a house for free. But the reality is, the Native Americans aren't, this isn't about necessarily running people off of their property, per se, in the way that you're kind of implying it is. And that absolute garbage answer on why you don't ever acknowledge anything is pretty clear what you know, they when you ever have to go to some bizarro extreme example to try to make people agree with your point, then it should tell you your argument is pretty damn weak. Native Americans just want an apology. And that is, in white America, one of the hardest damn things to get today. I'll never forget, and I'm not going to say names, I will never forget listening back when Paul Wellstone died. And there was a media host in town here who, a few weeks before he had passed away, was making comments of the point of how, you know, he wished Wellstone was dead. And then all of a sudden Wellstone died. And I don't think this is heavy lifting when you say, you know what, I was saying things in the heat of the moment. I was inappropriate. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. Instead, I was treated to this media personality and his sidekick. Well, the sidekick was screaming at him, never apologize, never say sorry. If you do, then you'll never stop. So never apologize. Just this white conservative rage hate about the idea of ever apologizing. And at no point was he addressing the real question, should he apologize? Yeah, he should have. He should have apologized. White America, for the record, we owe a crap load of apologies to the Native Americans. We owe a lot of apologies to the African Americans and quite a few other minority groups while we're at it. We do. Absolutely. And it doesn't make you a weak individual to say, I'm sorry. It makes you strong. It makes you at least look like you understand the gravity of what indeed happened. No one is looking at you and saying, if you apologize, that you then are taking responsibility for slavery or the genocide of the Native American tribes. No. What happened in many cases long time ago, in some cases as recently as the freaking 1970s. But it wasn't you that did it. Well, it might have been, I guess, but for the most part, most of those people are long dead. They're not looking for a pound of flesh from you. They're just looking for you to say, hey, I'm sorry, dear God, that's a horrible thing that happened to you. That should not happen. But yet, white America, because I think down deep inside, they know it was horrible. They know it was bad. They know it was wrong. They know it should have never happened. And yet, because they're so terrified of saying, I'm sorry, that they gloss over the fact that the apology needs to happen. That should be a given. What Native Americans and African Americans, most minorities want in this country is the same thing that white America has, the same opportunities. I can say as a white guy, absolutely, I have had benefits and access to advancement that many people that are or minority have not gotten. And what Native Americans, African Americans, Latinos, any minority group wants is the same opportunity to go into the bank and get the loan, the same opportunity to buy the house, the same opportunity when they go get the job, the same opportunity to have quality grocery stores and retail stores for them in their community. The same opportunities so that they don't have to beg for help because they have had a boot on their throat for a few hundred freaking years. And whereas you may want to sit there in white America and say, well, we're not putting the boot on anymore, aren't we? Do they have the opportunity? Do they have the equality? No, they don't. And the big first hurdle is this. I'm sorry. It should have never happened. Weak people cannot apologize when it's clear they need to. I there is a guy I used to room with. One time he opened up a kitchen cabinet and whacked me in the head with it. Wasn't paying attention, opened it up, and he looked at me and goes, you should have moved your head. It's like, dude, are you that incapable? I don't know what your daddy ever did to you or whatever secret society groups that you joined that you vowed that you're never going to say I'm sorry. But you're jackasses. You're just jackasses. If you do open a cabinet into someone's head, well, you should say I'm sorry. And trust me when I say this, that is a minor infraction. When you look at what happened to the Native Americans, when you looked at the African Americans. White America, it's about damn time we said I'm sorry. And if you are one of the people that are fighting furiously to never have to say it, well, you're the problem, not the solution. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Listen to Native Roots Radio. It's an exceptional radio show. Many days better than mine. I mean, let's face it. We'll take a break. We'll get a Minnesota coronavirus update when we do return. Peter Callahan coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Robert Pilot, very kind. Just really quick here, if I may. He did send me the story of Phyllis here. Phyllis Webstead, Orange Shirt Society, was 6 years old. So this was the 1970s. She's 54 years old today. This was the 1970s when this happened, people. Not ancient history. Phyllis Webstead was 6 years old when she was about to start the residential school she was attending. All excited for school, her grandmother brought her a brand new pretty orange shirt to wear to school. Once Phyllis arrived at the residential school, her clothing was stripped from her. Her hair was cut. The color of orange reminds Phyllis of her experiences at the residential school and her own words on what it reminded her of, how my feelings didn't matter, how no one cared, and I felt like it was worth nothing. All of us little children were crying and no one cared. September 30th marks the day when Indigenous children were stolen from their families and forced into the schools at the start of the school year. This day in color commemorates the heartbreaking legacy, trauma of the boarding and residential schools. Thank you, Robert, once again for the sheet on that. That is, once again, Phyllis, Robert, Ogama, Wendy, all Native Americans that might be listening. I know it probably doesn't mean a lot coming from me, but I'm sorry. I'm sorry that happened to you. That was truly one of the great travesties of humanity in the history of the planet. And it was wrong. There's so many things that white Europeans just absolutely messed up. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry for the situation we're in. I want to know what we can do to make this right. I know most Native Americans just want the same opportunities, the same options, the same life. And I'm willing to do what we can do to make that happen. But everyone, listen to me. The first step is, especially the white folks, the first step is saying, I'm sorry. And you know what? You might think, oh, what a weakling. Screw you, punk. No, apologies come from people who have strength, period. The people that never apologize, they're the weakest people I've ever met in my life. Sad, too. I mean, they are. Have you ever met one like that who just refuses to apologize ever? They are broken, empty, hollow human beings. I'm sorry. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's get into the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. Friday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 3,714 new cases. Sweet Jesus! 17 newly reported deaths? Yeah, once again, I remember a day not that long ago where 17 people died, and guess what? The country stopped, and they were demanding investigations, and they're, you know, well, that was in Afghanistan, or no, was that Benghazi, or what? Oh, when that happened, it was concern what was going on. 17 people died a day. Will it even be covered in the evening newscast? Will it even be covered in the Star Tribune?
Well, I'm sorry. We're going to be talking a little bit about this, about how Alan Page finally has got a blue check mark on his Twitter account. That's pretty important, too.
Sweet Lord. 3,714 new cases, 17 newly reported deaths. Sweet Lord. The state's death toll now is 8,170 since the start of the pandemic. As of September 29th, the state reported that 3,403,638 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,232,465 people have completed the vaccine series. As of September 29th, the state reported that, I've already read that. There you go. Through the 30th, the number of people who are hospitalized in Minnesota was 799. That's up 10 from yesterday. That was 789 was reported yesterday. So it's 799 today. The hospital has 209 are in intensive care, 590 in general hospital care. The 3,714 positive results on Friday were from 52,318 completed tests, creating a test positivity rate of 7.09%. The Minnesota test positivity rate over the past 7 days is 7.60. Once again, well above the 5%. You know, it's one of the things I kind of did like when we had the emergency orders in place is it just seemed like people took it more seriously. I think people took it more seriously that they felt, I mean, there was understanding in the civics kind of side of things, that there's a duty to the community above my own personal selfishness. Now, don't get me wrong, there's plenty of selfish jackasses out there. But it almost seemed like this was, you know, people took it more seriously. I went today, I had to run in and get dog food today. So I ran over to a Target store and ran in to get dog food. And quite literally, I think there was maybe outside of employees, all the employees were wearing masks, but customers, 6, 7. Can't tell you how many times I go up on social media today in the week, and I'll go see, you know, here I am over at the Twins game. Here I am over at the Vikings game. Here I am at the Gophers game, and no one's wearing a face mask. And how do you think this is going to get stopped if basically, you know, you feel as if, well, you know, I'll wear a mask from 9 to 5, but, you know, at 5:30, it's happy hour. Masks are off. I'm not going to care. I mean, the virus doesn't infect you at a football game, does it? I think that, you know, if you're going to get that stupid, we're going to continue to see numbers like this. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. When we do return, I will get more into the Minnesota coronavirus update, including, once again, latest update on the money for the frontline workers and how, once again, Republicans are trying desperately to limit the amount of people that can get that. Don't ever tell me Republicans are for workers' rights. Please, don't ever give me that crap. Dear Lord, all you have to do is look at the negotiations on the bonus pay after for frontline workers, and you'll see exactly who the Republican Party is. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Good to have you with us here today. More of the Minnesota coronavirus update. Weeks into Minnesota's latest COVID-19 surge, troubling signs are emerging about the spread of the Delta variant in schools and in community wastewater. Now, I know it might seem like kind of weird to bring wastewater, but you can really see signs of how good or bad something is going through stuff like measuring the amount of coronavirus that's in the wastewater. Well, guess what? In terms of measuring the virus in the wastewater, we're not seeing a downturn, said Dr. Tim Schacker, S-C-H-A-C-K-E-R, Vice Dean of Research at the University of Minnesota's Medical School. It has not come down at all. In fact, it's the highest level we've ever seen it. Oh, for God's sakes. 6 weeks ago, Schacker spoke to Care 11 about the statewide network of wastewater plants, which were helping to track surges in the virus more than a week before it was reflected in traditional testing. We are sampling 65% of the population of the state twice a week with this technique, he said. So it truly, really has the potential of being an early warning system. 6 weeks later, that early warning system indicates a peak won't be coming quickly. I just looked at today's data, and it's higher than it's ever even was at the fall surge of 2020. But it doesn't mean that we're in for the same type of serious outcome. Schacker says what's different this time is that hospitalization, still high right now, don't appear to be on the same trajectory. One way to reconcile that is to say there are a lot of people who are infected and shedding who don't have symptoms. Is that a testament of the higher vaccination rate among adults in the state? Yeah, it is. We're not going to have as many symptoms, and they could be shedding the virus. So I think what we're seeing is just a shift away from the pandemic and how the pandemic's playing out. So basically what they're saying is that, you know, if you're vaccinated and you get the virus, but you really don't come down with any symptoms of the virus, you still have the virus. And so it's still showing up in the testing. It just is not showing up in the higher hospitalization rate. And doesn't mean you're also, by the way, if you don't have symptoms, doesn't mean you're not contagious. Should make sure we mention that as well. The shift appears to be in demographics. In late August, the amount of virus and wastewater across the state appeared to be leveling off. But as kids went back to school, the numbers shot back up again. The latest growing part of the population that are affected are kids. They tend to have symptoms. That part concerns me because even though many kids aren't getting sick, more and more are. He says, until a vaccine is approved for those 12 and under, that their best protection at school has unfortunately turned into a political fight. It's not a political fight. It's a howler monkeys basically trying to scream down intelligence. We know that masks work. We know that they decrease transmission and keep people safer. Why we are having this debate, I couldn't comment. Let me comment. It's because there's a bunch of idiots who have basically made this political because they want to worship Trump and they feel as if this is the hill they're going to die on, quite literally. So they, even though they're stupid morons who don't want to understand, well, don't get me wrong, like I say, they're anti-max, they're a mask, they're anti-vaccine until they get sick. And then all of a sudden, the same doctors and nurses and scientists who they berated as being getting in the way of Americans are all of a sudden, help me, I'm sick. That's what's going on. Bunch of freaking selfish hypocrites. That's what it is. Your standard Republican voter today. So I'll take care of the commenting part. I have no problem doing it. Masking is a tool that we have that's very effective. It's just not being used properly. Amen to that. And it is. It is a crime. It's just an absolute freaking crime that we're at the point where we cannot, you know, we actually have, you know, I'm going to throw a temper tantrum. What was the name of that kid from League of Their Own? The kid that was in the dugout that was always giving everyone, you're gonna lose, you're gonna lose. Remember that kid? Oh, God. Nermal or something like that. Oh, God. Yeah, he was when did the Republican Party become the kid from League of Their Own? You know, and will Tom Hanks please throw the glove at them and just knock them down? Hey, please, could you do that? They have learned that they basically just scream at the top of their lungs. And like I said, and don't underestimate the fact that these people are threatening to hurt and kill school board members because they're deranged freaking lunatics whose ability to look in the mirror and say, hey, I'm the problem, doesn't even exist. So they think they're doing Jeebus's work on earth by basically threatening school board members. They're idiots. By the way, Jesus, pro-vaccine. Trust me, if you read the Gospels, that's pretty clear. He was pro-vaccine. You might want to find some secondary passage in either the Old Testament or a secondary book of the New Testament. No, Jesus was pretty clear. He was pro-vaccine. So if you're Christian and you're trying to say, my religion, no, it doesn't. Nope, nope, no, 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 no. You are wildly wrong. I mean, that's like you have never read the Bible. It really is. Like you have no idea what's in the Bible you claim to be embracing in life. It's almost like that's the case completely. Anyway, speaking of fake Christians, Republicans. Minnesota lawmakers can't seem to agree on how to give away $250 million in federal funding to frontline workers. The Frontline Worker Pay Working Group, which has made up three DFL lawmakers, three Republican lawmakers, and three of Governor Walz's appointees, has been meeting in recent weeks to come up with a plan to disperse $250 million in direct support to federal funds. The group was supposed to submit their recommendations by September 6th. They never did. Republicans on Thursday after weeks after the deadline, finally this, and by the way, is there anything more predictable than Republicans having a deadline, not being able to meet it, and then acting like they've basically delivered the golden goose 6 weeks later when they're, or 5 weeks later when they were supposed to deliver their proposal? Yes, that's Republicans. They talk about how they want to distribute the bonuses. They want the pool of frontline workers to be limited to those who work in highest sustained COVID-19 risk during the pandemic: nurses, long-term care workers, hospice staff, first responders, and correction officers. The proposal, but they still want to even put more limitations on it. Their proposal would amount to $1,200 per person, with bonus checks for about 200,000 people. To be eligible, the workers couldn't have worked from home. They had to receive. Okay, so there's not many people that didn't have at least have one or two shifts at home. I mean, I think the nurses probably wouldn't be there, but there was, there's a lot of these people that were, especially when this first started, they didn't quite know what to do. But if you worked at home at all one day, nope, then you're disqualified. They had to receive less than 1 month of unemployment. So if they were laid off and then were hired back, but they received some unemployment for, say, 2 months, well, they're not qualified. Worked a minimum of 1,200 hours between March and December. That's about 30 hours a week. So basically, you had to be, more than half-time, but maybe not full-time, but you had to be working consistently all that time. What about vacations or anything? If you took a vacation during that time, does that count? Or if you got COVID during that time and were out of commission for, say, 3 or 4 weeks, then does that negate you? Because it kind of sounds like it does. Karen Housley, we've said from the beginning these bonuses need to be amount that is meaningful, prioritized for those who took the most risk, and recognizes the workers who kept us safe. Funny story. Well, exactly. Let me go back to this. We only have $250 million to work with, but that's enough to prioritize the healthcare workers who donned PPE and cared for COVID-positive patients. It's enough to recognize the first responders who doubled down on the already risky job. We can recognize the aspiring work of hospice staff or there for our loved ones when we were not allowed to be. Now, once again, I'm not saying any of those people and groups shouldn't get some of the bonus. Absolutely, they should. The problem is that Republicans demanded a lot of people get back to work. They want to kind of skip past that thing, but there was a lot of Republicans out there demanding grocery store workers need to get back to work. And once they went back to work, they were all like, you're heroes. But now, you're not so much a hero anymore. They don't want to give you any money. Or janitorial staff who kept buildings clean. They were all screaming, get back to work in empty trash cans. And then when you did go back to work, they say, you're heroes. And then they said, today, you're not so much a hero anymore. Daycare workers. Do you remember when Republicans acted as if they were the voice of the daycare worker or the daycare owner back when they were trying to stop the expansion of pre-K education? Do you remember that? I remember that. We love the daycare workers. Well, they don't love you so much anymore. They're not going to give you any bonuses, even though back in the spring of last year, they were, get back to work. But they made you a nice sign that said, we consider you a hero. And so, yeah, that's that in their mind, what they think is going to be good enough. So, and by the way, it should be mentioned, of the people that do apply, you have to have a very specific set of parameters to get the money. Oh, Republicans. And I don't care. There I've had one or two knucklehead union guys come on this show talk about, we're endorsing Republicans because they say they care about the worker. Bull crud. Bull crud, they care about the worker. They would wipe out your union tomorrow if they could with a smile on their face. And if you have any questions about how the Republicans think about the workers, just think about the people they demanded get back out there during a pandemic and work, who they themselves said were heroes, but now when it's time to show them that they think they're heroes, they're not going to help them out. No, they're not for the worker at all. You are duped. You're duped, or else you're just a plant, some pro-Republican guy who got a union job who's basically trying to pretend like, I'm kind of up in the air. No, you're not. If you're a union person, you shouldn't be up in the air at all. You can see exactly who's screwing over the workers. It's the Republicans. And don't think for one second that if the Republicans couldn't get rid of every union in the state tomorrow with a vote, they would do it with a smile on their face. But you guys would probably see like, isn't it great that they've killed off our union? Oh, jeez. Anywho, let's look at the Democrats who are in favor of expanding the pool to eligible essential workers, who kept society going during the pandemic, couldn't work from home, including meatpacking plant workers, grocery workers, janitorial staff, daycare workers. It'd be in addition to those mentioned by the GOP plans. Democrats' proposal, which they presented weeks ago, not like yesterday with the Republicans, TikTok goes the clock there, rightos, would be an application process for essential workers directly exposed to COVID. Workers would get a minimum of $375 per worker, benefiting more than 600,000 people who worked the front lines during the pandemic. Democrats and many frontline workers criticized the Republican plan on 30, saying it unfairly excludes hundreds of thousands of people. Hundreds of thousands of people the Republicans demanded get back to work, remember? The Minnesota Nurses Association, which represent nurses who could get more money with the Republican plan, is asking lawmakers to come up with a plan that doesn't exclude other workers who are also at risk during the pandemic. So if this was some sort of plan to basically convince nurses that, hey, you want to leave them because we're going to give you a one-time big paycheck. Apparently, they're not falling for it. I think they understand exactly who you guys are on the Republican side. Excluding any frontline workers is a slap to the face of someone who put their life at risk for our community, said Deb Tower, president of the Minnesota Licensed Practical Nurse Association, in a statement. Without the school workers who watched our children, many of our nurses would have had to stay home when schools went to remote learning. Without the food service workers and store clerks, we would have struggled to keep our families healthy. It was the sacrifices of all frontline workers that gave us the ability to show up and care for our communities. Amen, sister. Yes. Absolutely. While the DFL's plan would amount to pay less per worker than the Republican plan, it's better at getting nothing, frontline workers said, noting the $375 payment would be meaningful to low-income workers, especially those who had to take unpaid time off during the pandemic. The working group is expected to meet again early this month. They can reach a deal. Governor Walz said he'll call a special session in the Minnesota legislature so lawmakers can vote on the proposed legislation and send direct payments to the frontline workers. Even if the working group agrees on a plan, something unrelated could hold up the pandemic bonus pay. Senate Republicans have threatened to hold a confirmation vote on Minnesota Department of Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm. They could move to remove her from Walz's cabinet, making her the third cabinet official to be ousted amid the Walz administration. Once again, they're thinking of getting rid of the Department of Health Commissioner during a pandemic because they're bitter and angry because vaccines and masks work. Yeah, they're idiots. But reminder, the same Senate Republicans had a super spreader event right after the last election where apparently they weren't wearing masks or socially distancing. They got a whole bunch of their own party sick, likely killed one of their own senators, and then never told the Democrats as they head back to office. So, you know, science. Walz has said he won't call a special session if the vote on Malcolm is on the agenda. And so he needs to, you know, before the special session gets called, he needs to have them basically agree that there's not going to be a vote on Malcolm. So 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. By the way, I mean, only a fool would go with this Republican plan. Because like I said, what happened if a nurse got sick and doesn't meet their threshold of 30 hours per week because for 5 weeks they were at home or in the hospital where they freaking worked? You know, the Republican plan is basically to give as little money out as possible. Because once again, as much as they say, we love you guys, frontline workers, as we love you, you know, EMT people and nurses, the reality is, but you have to jump through a bunch of hoops to get the money. And what my gut feeling is the whole goal here is to give out as little as that money as possible. And then they come back and they say, you know who really needs this? A billionaire needs another tax break. Let's give the billionaires another tax break since no one wanted this money for the frontline workers. That's my guess at what's really going to happen with the bonuses, at least if they had their way, which is once a good reminder, vote freaking Democrat. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Sometimes you don't need the Republicans to basically prevent needed aid from getting distributed. Sometimes just the conservative mentality basically foils you even when people are trying to give you a hand. I don't know if you saw the story I posted up online earlier today. Jeff Krueger fears that come Monday, hundreds of Minnesota townships will leave money on the table. The state's 1,781 townships qualify for roughly $100 per resident from the American Rescue Plan Act. The money could help give them more broadband service, improve roads, and shift townships accounting from ledger paper to laptops, said Krueger, executive director of the Minnesota Association of Townships. But with the Monday application deadline fast approaching, fewer than 60% of Minnesota's townships have requested their share of the funds. So over 40% haven't. It's money on the table, people. It's a shame. Every town can use this, said Perch Lake Town Clerk Laura Eames, whose community near Cloquet is contemplating putting the dollars towards grants, road repairs, and video conferencing equipment. Great. Perfect. You're making the township better. Fantastic. That's what it's designed for. Beautiful. I think our citizens would be outraged if we didn't use the money. I would agree with you, too. If there's money on the table and you say, I'm not going to get it, or because you just don't know to go get it. I got to imagine the guy from the Minnesota Association of Townships have told them, go get the money. The American Rescue Plan designated nearly $377 million for local governments in Minnesota with populations of less than 50,000 residents. The money can be used for a range, actually $37.7 million. The money can be used as a range of needs from replacing revenue that was lost during the pandemic to upgrading water and sewer systems. Tell me a township that can't use that, for God's sakes. More than 600 of the state's townships, those with fewer than 200 residents, this is the first chance to directly receive federal assistance during the pandemic. Once again, this is the Democrats getting out into these communities and saying, we're here to help you. Here is money. Fix your towns. You can spend this money any way you want to. They did not get dollars through the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act last year, but many of those same small towns could miss out again despite being eligible because they haven't filled out the paperwork. Minnesota management and budget officials... many of the people told them the Minnesota, they must redistribute the money to other small local government units. But the problem is that the Minnesota Management and Budget Office, they disagree. They say the state isn't required to redistribute the dollars. They say they want to see how much money is not requested before deciding what to do with it. So basically, if you haven't asked for the money, if you think that there's some sort of obligation to get you money, no, it doesn't sound like that at all. And trust me, there's enough townships out there that could use more than $100 per person on justifiable upgrades needed within those communities. I could easily see this money going to other townships. Easily. Minnesota's applications are lagging behind some of the other states. A spokeswoman from the Michigan Townships Association said 98% of Michigan townships have gotten that. In Wisconsin, all but 8 of its 1,245 towns have applied. The average population township in Minnesota is a little over 500. The average size of Wisconsin is closer to 1,100. Many small communities depend on volunteers for the town's administration, some of whom are farmers who are currently working around the clock in their fields. So that might be playing a role here. Others have said they don't know how to spend the money on. He tells those officials, you have 3 years to figure this out. Don't worry about that right now. Just get the money. Then there are set people who see the dollars as a giveaway program, too proud to accept what they see as a handout. But then, okay, then just do us all a favor, because I think we all can see where that's going. Don't then act like you're a victim when you don't get any money when it's redistributed to other places. In Denmark, Minnesota, the money goes to roads, bridges, and zoning. Hegan said they haven't saved much for updating the town hall, so the federal funds could allow them to add touchless sinks, toilets, upgrade audiovisual. Yeah, perfect! Perfect! We're trying to help you, and you ignorant fools are saying no! But then you'll say, the Democrats never try to help us! For God's sakes, apply for the money. We want to give it to you. Hour two of the show is up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, is the Matt McNeil Show, broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950. Good to have you with us. 5 o'clock hour here, 6 o'clock hour, Native Roots Radio here on the radio station. Stay with us through the entire afternoon. We do appreciate it. Matt and Patrick here today. Patrick, do you have any fun plans for this weekend, if I can ask? You kind of trumped me today going up to Lutzen for the fall colors. Anything on the agenda for the weekend?
I'm actually going to be here. We've got a full slate of shows tomorrow, including Food Freedom Radio will be live, which doesn't happen very often. That's at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. So stay with us. We got some great shows on 950 all weekend long.
We're going to make Patrick work for your pleasure. Make sure... Make sure you're here for that. It is October 1st. I always mention this every time. XL Energy is reminding customers that Minnesota's cold weather rule kicks in today, protecting residential customers from having utilities turned off due to non-payment if it involves a main heating source. As part of the rule, customers are required to immediately contact the utility to set up a payment plan if they received a disconnection notice. It's that time of the year. You need to get out there and take advantage of that. So, contact if you have a problem with this. XL Energy says some eligible customers can establish payment plans, requires them to pay up no more than 10% of household income. And so there's some options there as well. For more information on the cold energy rule and programs to help residential customers keep the heat on, log on to the XL Energy Center website or call XL Energy's residential customer service line. I do like that because there are states where they will turn off. It could be the coldest day of the year and they'll turn off your power. And that's just, where's the humanity? Where's the Christian nation then? It doesn't exist, does it? 952-946-6205. So, Patrick, today I had to run some errands and I had an incident at a drive-thru. I'm not going to say which pharmacist, but I went to a pharmacist and there was a drive-thru, okay? And I went up there and I get to the window and the woman puts up a sign that says, our phone system is down at the time being, sorry for any inconvenience. And so I'm in the drive-thru. So the first thing I said is, well, it stinks if you got to make a phone call, but how's that going to affect us? They run their, you know how she talks to the people outside is through the phone system. So with the phone system down, she can't talk to me through this plate glass window easily. So she's basically saying there's no way for us to get in. So she sends out this note, piece of paper. On it is written, tell me the name, the last name, and the date of birth of the prescriptions you want. And I send this information back and through the, you know, so, you know, few minutes. You know, she kind of puts it out there. She writes down the note. She puts it through the thing. I get it into my car. She sent a Sharpie pen along with it. I write down the names, the birth dates, exactly what the prescriptions are for. Put the pad back in the bank teller thing, and it goes back inside. I start to wait. Now, it's already been about 2.5-3 minutes at this point. As she's got the information, I see her typing away on the computer, because the computer is not affected by this. There's a guy behind me. I'm going to guess maybe 5 minutes has passed. Nothing seems to be extraordinarily long as far as this interaction. Even if the phone lines or the voice box was working, it didn't seem like it was going to be that big of a deal. This guy, I noticed his car door open. He's an older chap, older fella, gets out. He's got the angriest look on his face I've seen in a while. Just really angry. Now, once again, he wasn't there. When I got into line at the drive-thru, there were two cars ahead of me. He wasn't there until I pulled up to the drive-thru. So he'd been there for maybe 5 minutes. And it's not like it's a McDonald's or a BK or something like that, where, you know, you generally get your food within 2 or 3 minutes. It's a drugstore, a pharmacy. You have to wait for the person to find the things, go get them to you, kind of run transaction. It's a little bit more detailed. And he gets out of the car. He turns around to the car behind him, does one of these hands in the air, like, I don't know what's taking this guy so long, like this. And he starts walking up to my car. And I'm like, holy crud, is this guy, am I going to get into a fight with some elderly man who I guess feels as if when he arrives someplace, clear a path because he's here. I cannot figure this out, but he was, I don't know, maybe, you know, maybe he needed one of those, you know, erectile dysfunction pills, and, you know, clock's ticking, Matt, come on. I don't know. You know, I hope it was something so frivolous as that. I hope it wasn't like, you know, a bee sting and you're looking for an EpiPen at this point. It's like, but at the same time, I don't think you'd be getting out of your car storming towards me. Yeah, I, you know, as I'm going through this thing, the woman's phone line starts working and she goes, oh, I can talk to you now. Basically, gets my prescriptions. I leave. And I'm getting ready to leave, I says, I'm just going to let you know. And okay, so the guy gets out of his car, starts walking through my car. He's back, basically at the back of my car, and he must have kind of tried to figure out what am I going to say to this person? Get out of my way? What's taking you? Well, it's a pharmacy. It's not like I'm getting, a Whopper. Getting some sliders. He must have realized it. So he turns around. I mean, he was livid. I have no doubt he was a conservative. I seriously have no doubt. Elderly guy. Angry at the, because he's, you know, well, you're in my way. I mean, of course, conservative. But dear Lord, we have got that person. He needs some time outside in the beautiful fall colors, I think. And I don't know how we've gotten to this point where things are so on edge that you got the people on the left saying, hey, I don't want you sick, I don't want you dead, and I don't want you bankrupt. And the people on the right going, how dare you? And you're like, what in the world is going on? But if you've gotten to the point where a 5-minute wait as a drive-thru is sending you off the freaking edge, you know, you need a few pieces of medication from inside that place. Just calm down. I gave the heads up. I gave the warning to the woman that was working the counter. I just said to her, you know, the guy behind me just got out of his car and kind of started storming up here. I don't know what his deal is, but he's going to be a delight. And she just looked at me and she said, yeah, okay. Still was a lot faster than the 20-person line inside the store. I could see the line inside through the window. Yeah, it's just the way of our world today. Just people getting angry. It is kind of scary how people fly off the edge, and they just seem to be able to fly off the edge at the most little thing. Have you ever had anyone come up at a drive-thru, Patrick, and kind of, what's taking you so long?
Actually, I was thinking about it. It happened in January. I was at a White Castle over off of...
Solid.
Off of... yeah, off of... there in Hopkins, and there was a guy in line ahead of me. Now, it was a slow line, but
when have you... Okay, I have been to that White Castle. When has that line ever moved fast?
That's a good question. But, you know, there was a guy with a couple cars ahead of me, and I, you know, and every once in a while, I just hear like this line, what's going on, G-Diet, and stuff like that. And, I mean, I don't even think the people in the restaurant could hear him.
Oh. Wait, do you remember what you got?
Yeah, I always get the double cheese slider meal with the fries.
Nothing wrong with that, man. Nothing wrong with that. I love a good White Castle. You know, it's not my fault. I mean, seriously, the amount of people that think that the world, you know, if they don't get things instantaneously, that somehow the world has failed them. You take a break. Get out into a freaking park this weekend. Seriously, get out into a park. Go out and enjoy the leaves. I'll tell you what, coming up later on this hour, we're doing some dancing. And if you're thinking about jumping out at a drive-thru, whether that's at a White Castle or a pharmacy, because you're angry because it's taking some time, you need to take a few minutes and we'll do some dancing, okay? All right. So one from one of Minnesota's finest. One of Minnesota's finest. I got some Owl City coming up. We'll do that, okay? But right now, Brett Johnson, kind enough to join us on a Friday as he usually does. Peter Callahan. I believe it is, from our fine friend over at MinPost, who covers government politics over there. They have a talk. One of the things, Snowbait, which is, that's actually a really good plan. It's a good program. And of course, Republicans hate it. But he'll talk about that. Other things. It's Peter Callahan from MinPost with Brett Johnson right here on AM 950.
And we're back on AM 950 as it's Brett Johnson with you here on a Friday afternoon, as right now we're joined by Peter Callahan, who covers state government for MinPost. MinPost.com is the website for the latest in Minnesota political news. Great resource to follow along what's happening in the state, as we're going to be chatting with Peter about a couple of stories he's recently wrote in MinPost. One on this new program that will hopefully bring more movies back to Minnesota. You probably remember the movie boom we had back in the 90s when we had a bunch of films that were shot in Minnesota. Well, maybe that could change coming up here in the next decade with a new program in Minnesota. And then we'll also be talking about the new legislative leaders that were elected in the state Senate, as both the Republicans and Democrats have new leaders. Peter, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's start off with this new Minnesota tax credit program that could potentially lead to a boost in terms of films being shot here in the state of Minnesota. Now, I'll say I'm a former accountant, so I kind of am fascinated by this stuff. I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to this stuff. And it's really interesting the way this program works that could potentially bring more films to Minnesota. Right now, Minnesota has a film production tax credit, which is different from the old Snowbait programs we had back in the 90s that brought movies like The Mighty Ducks, Fargo, Grumpy Old Men, and Jingle all the way to the state. So, Peter, tell us a little bit about how this new program differs from the old Snowbait program that we had back in the 90s.
Well, Snowbait is Minnesota lingo for a rebate, simply. At the end of the production, accountants like you sit down with all the paperwork, and they have a certain list of expenditures in the state that they can apply for, and they send it in, and the state sends them a check for some percentage of those expenses, 25%. It's a rebate, and it goes back to the film company. Those, and the state hasn't really funded that program for some years. I mean, it still existed, but there was no money in it, and the legislature had to put money in it every budget, and they just kind of stopped doing it. This program is similar to other states, and it's also very similar to what the state has used for some time for its historic preservation tax credit. So what you are doing in that case is, again, certain amounts of your expenditures, if it's a rehab of a building or if it's a film, you can apply to the state for a tax credit. And they give you a piece of paper, literally, and they say, here, you have a certificate that's worth this much money. and you can do two things with it. Actually, you can do three things with it. If you have tax liability, you can just use it to essentially pay your taxes to the state. If it's a $250,000 tax credit and you owe $250,000 in taxes, you now pay zero in taxes. Or you can get it refunded. Certain refundable tax credits mean even if you didn't have that much in tax liability, if you only had 200, you could deduct 200 from your taxes and they'd even send you a check for the other $50,000. But what I sort of found out, it happens, and really I found out because I wasn't paying that much attention until this thing passed, was that you can sell that certificate to other taxpayers. So you could take a $100,000 tax credit, sell it for $95,000 to a big insurance company or a big bank or a multilateral or a multinational corporation, and they would like to have that $5,000 tax deduction. They just bought themselves a $5,000 reduction in their taxes that they owe to the state. The numbers are much bigger than that generally. They might be buying $10 million or $20 million worth of tax credit. And what works for the film producer is they get the money right up front to help pay for making the film. So they're willing to take 95 cents on the dollar in order to get the money up front, and the big bank is willing to buy it in order to reduce their own taxes.
Interesting. So essentially, yeah, if you're a film production company, you're getting that money up front, whereas if you were to just to take that money from the tax refund, you might be waiting several months, so I can certainly see the benefit there. Has this idea been tried before in Minnesota or around the country? It sounds very unique, and it sounds beneficial to obviously both parties, whoever's buying and selling these tax credits.
Right. Well, it's pretty common around the country, and as I said, the state has used that already for the historic preservation credit. Talking to people who do some of these big projects, you know, Sherman Associates in Minneapolis did the Canopy Hotel project, which is kind of near the football stadium. And that was a historic building. They put a hotel in it, a restaurant, and they said, we got $8 million worth of state and federal tax credits. We're not going to owe $8 million in taxes. There's no way we could use them that way. But if we sell them, they suddenly have, early on, when they're trying to put the money together for a project, they have that much money to pay for the actual work, to pay the contractors and the electricians and to buy stuff. They think that upwards of 25% of their costs are from these tax credits. The other might be loans or their own money to pay for this. And these credits are bought and sold in this marketplace by a very niche group of brokers who do this kind of work around the country.
So I know the state of Georgia, for instance, has a much bigger program than we currently have in Minnesota, but could this help us draw more films? Like I know Georgia gets a bunch of Marvel films, for instance, that film in their state, but could this program have a big impact in Minnesota? Kind of people saying about this in terms of Minnesota being able to draw more movies to our state, kind of like what we saw back in the 1990s?
Well, there's two questions to ask here. The first one is, would film producers take advantage of that free money? And the answer is yeah. Why wouldn't they? There's a lot of competition. And when a state like Minnesota has a $5 million program and Georgia has a many hundreds of millions of dollars program, it's unlikely that Marvel is going to come here or Disney or some big production company because there just isn't enough money in the program. But a Ford commercial might, come in for a couple days, film. The whole thing is, a couple $100,000 and they can get a tax credit for that. Sure, there will be activity, I believe, for those credits. The bigger question that a lot of people don't like people like me talking about is there a bigger economic impact to the state? Meaning, could I just take that $5 million and give it to film production workers and have the same economic impact as if I give it to production companies who then hire these folks? When you do an economic development incentive like this, you're hoping to grow your economy or grow an industry in your state that has more ripple effects. And that's an open question on film credit, because 32 states have them. at some level, it's a race to the bottom as to who can sort of give away more money to these production companies. And it's still very much an economic question whether the state economy as a whole benefits. But your easier question is, will there be production companies who will want to come in and take advantage of that credit? I would say, of course.
So as you frame that question as to whether we have an economic benefit from these types of programs, it reminds me a lot about the debate we heard when we talk about building new sports stadiums around Minnesota and, of course, around the country, where we often hear, well, if we help fund these stadiums, it'll have an economic impact. And it sounds like we're kind of hearing the same argument when it comes to making these tax credits available and sellable to these different production companies that come in. So have we heard any information from other states in terms of whether they've seen an economic benefit, or is it kind of similar to when we talk about sports stadiums, where it's a little bit tougher to get a clear answer on that?
You know, the devil can quote scripture for his purpose, and industries like this can quote economic studies that meet the needs that they have. I looked at some that I thought were objective, sort of academic studies, one out of Georgia that found that it just, for, you know, the investment of state dollars per job was so high. And it was like $60,000 to $70,000 in state dollars per job created. I'm not sure rationally you would say that that's a good deal. Now, if you are a film production worker, you'd think it's a good idea. It's a good program. I mean, up in the Range, they just spent some state money to attract a manufacturer of wood products for construction industry in an area that needs jobs. So, I mean, you make a different equation. And, you know, we're up in the Range. There's a lot of people who are looking for work. It's worth it for us to put this money in. But it doesn't necessarily grow the forest products industry into some great extent in the state of Minnesota, because there's always another state that will give you a better deal down the line.
Yeah, the old kind of race to the bottom argument, as you were talking about a few minutes ago. And you can find much more on this piece, because it's kind of interesting to read about how this new program could work that could potentially bring films or commercials to Minnesota. Find more about that over at MinPost.com. We are speaking with Peter Callahan, who covers state government for MinPost. And one more piece I wanted to talk to you about that you recently wrote, and that has to do with the two new leaders we have in the state Senate, as Paul Gazelka recently stepped down as the leader of the Republicans, as did DFL leader Susan Kent. I do want to learn a little bit more about the two new leaders we have of both the DFL and the Republicans. Melissa Franzen is the new Senate Minority Leader, while Jeremy Miller, the Republican, is the new Senate Majority Leader. And both Franzen and Miller do have something in common, as they're part of what's called the Purple Caucus, which you can probably do the math and figure out what the Purple Caucus means. But Peter, tell us a little bit about this, and what has it been known for recently, this idea of having both the Democrats and Republicans work together in this Purple Caucus?
Well, it hasn't meant much, because the Purple Caucus as an entity sort of is in mothballs. There's something similar in the House and Senate called the Civility Caucus, which is really more in tune to, can't we all get along? Can't we be respectful toward one another? Whereas the Purple Caucus, which was started by a Duluth Senator, Reinhart, some decade ago, was actually attempting to get moderates from both parties together. So they were politically aligned, and they might come at issues differently. So it was not really about, can't we be polite to one another, but is there a center group that could be somewhat of a counterforce to very liberal and very conservative legislating? And could it be some people from the DFL and some people from the Republicans? And both Senator Franzen and Senator Miller were parts of that. In fact, Senator Miller was the Republican co-chair. And the first year that Senator Reinhart started this, he couldn't find a Republican co-chair. And so he sort of had this idea for a while, and it wasn't until Jeremy Miller was elected that he agreed to sign on to that. And they used to come up with their own position on the budget, say, or their own legislative agenda. And Franzen, as a freshman member, was part of the group, and they would meet and they would talk and they would go through issues. And sometimes people who might not be very, you know, in the middle, they might be pretty conservative or pretty liberal, would come in and make their proposals, you know, to this group in hopes of getting their support for things. So it was going for some years. And then when Senator Reiner decided not to run for re-election, he could not find a DFL member to take his place. And it's sort of into hibernation since then. But I guess that the point of it was that these were two people who were willing, and you may believe it or you may not, that's a very risky position to take, that you would dare talk to members of the other party and perhaps seek common ground. That comes at political risk in the two parties.
Yeah, and I wonder if that could possibly change the relationship between the Democrats and the Republicans in the state Senate, since, well, for the most part, not just in Minnesota, but around the country, generally, the relationship between Democratic and Republican leaders has not been good. We've seen that in the state House and the state Senate here in this state, and of course, that's true in a lot of places around the country. But being that they are part of both of, they are both part of this purple caucus, you wonder if that could maybe change the dynamic a little bit of the legislature, or maybe it won't, being that now they're in a leadership position, there's a little bit more pressure to deliver results to your base. So that'll be kind of interesting to see how things work as we head into what's expected to be a special session within the next few weeks, and of course, the next session that'll be coming up in 2022.
Yeah, we will. I mean, to a large degree, people outside of the legislative arena make assumptions based on sort of press releases and press conferences and fiery rhetoric. But to a large degree, the leaders can and do get along pretty well. I mean, the current situation, I guess it isn't current since Paul Gazelka is not the leader anymore, but he and Melissa Hortman got along very professionally and had a very good working relationship. And that is possible. And I think Senator Kent and Senator Gazelka, to maybe a lesser degree, did. So it's not totally unheard of that they can work together. The thing about a leader, though, is you kind of suspend your own politics. I mean, you still have beliefs, you still vote, but you're kind of supposed to be speaking for the group. And So what you see of a Senator Miller working with the Republican caucus may not be obvious. It may be how he deals with the members sort of in caucus and privately before they come out with a position. And he also can influence the tone because the majority leader speaks last. And they sort of speak first on the floor and they speak last on the floor. And in those ways, that person really can set the tone of the debate. And I think that's where you might see it as much as anything. But I can tell you, if there's something that's upset the D's, Senator Fransom will let them know, and she'll let them have it. Senator Kent certainly did. Certainly Kurt Dowd does in the House. So, you know, that kind of rhetoric won't fade necessarily if the two people have a good working relationship. It sort of illustrates to some degree how much theater this is. As opposed to, are people really angry, or are they just in a position where they have to look angry?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch over the next year or so, being that it's very unusual to have the Senate leaders of both caucuses step down at the same time and have two new leaders simultaneously. So we'll have to watch and see how that functions over the next year as we head into the 2022 election cycle. You can read much more about Miller and Franzen and this purpose we're part of, again, over at MinPost.com. We have been speaking with Peter Callahan, who covers state government for MinPost. Make sure you follow all of his work over at MinPost.com. Peter, as always, thanks for the time today. Really appreciate it.
Okay. It's been great talking to you.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Why am I laughing already? Christy Noem. Oh, she's not happy. Oh, the governor of South Dakota. Reminder, there are some Republicans that want to leave the state of Minnesota, take all those moocher counties that have been taking all the Twin Cities tax dollars and redistributing them to their counties. They want to take their counties and shift it over to South Dakota. I'm like, what's taking you guys so long? leaving just the eastern side of the state as the state of Minnesota. Off you go. Toodaloo. Bye. Guys, you know, let the door hit your ass on the way out. What's taking you so long? I mean, I'd love to have all of our Twin Cities dollars back from you moocher counties. I guess it was just all bravado and talk. But no, come on, move. Time for you to go. Off you go. Get with your conservative values over there where attorney generals blast into people on the highway and kill them and get basically off with a slap on the wrist. Or we'll talk about nepotism. Oh, the nepotism of Kristi Noem. I want you, your boss's boss, and your boss's boss in my office with my daughter to explain why my daughter didn't get the license she deserved. Wow. Anywho, that's so far. Let's get an update here. Turning to Bluestem Prairie first, once upon a time long ago, South Dakota was known as the Sunshine State. No longer, the governor and attorney general work to make sure citizens enjoy a little sunshine as possible when it comes to the activity of state leaders. Late last month and last week, we posted about the South Dakota legislators calling on special session to ponder impeaching the state attorney general. Yesterday, the Daily Beast, Zoe Richards, reported on Kristi Noem ditching Corey Lewandowski, who she had been getting input from. Okay, I'm sorry. Oh, it's just beginning. Apparently, he was an advisor to Kristi. Is that what the kids are calling it today? Advising? She was an advisor to Kristi Noem, and she has said, since Lewandowski, and we talked about Corey Lewandowski, he got drunk at an event and basically sexually harassed a major donor's wife, getting into the realm of stalking her at this event to where she was concerned for her own safety. Yeah, he's kind of been booted from the Trump circle. He's been booted from that MAGA pack that he's part of. And now Kristi Noem apparently has decided that she doesn't need any more of his input. Mm-hmm. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem has cut ties with Corey Lewandowski a day after angrily dismissing claims that she was having an affair with the former Trump advisor, who'd also been advising Noem. By the way, quick story, side note. Clang, clang, clang goes the trolley. I'm sorry. Side note. Just a side note. Anywho, a spokesman for the governor, Ian Fury, took a break from his at-home porn video shooting. Ian Fury is your name, dude? Ian Fury. Sound like a Bond villain. Anyway, Ian. Corey was always a volunteer, never a paid a dime, campaign or official. He will not be advising the governor in regard to the campaign or official office. Never got paid a dime. Well, that's a different crime, isn't it? Money's on the dresser, Corey. Money's on the dresser. Allegedly. It's salacious gossip, damn it. Can't we just leave Kristi Noem alone? Nope, I'm not. No, God, no. Oh, sweet Lord, no. I'm going to continue on with this. No. I make jokes. That's what I jokes. Statement claiming that he's always been a volunteer appeared to downplay the role he served in advising Noem. Well, I guess that tells me a lot about Corey. Oh. You know, it's always those rageaholic guys that always seem to... Well, never mind. Sorry. On Tuesday, a conservative news outlet called American Greatness. What? Ugh. Can you tell, by the way, can you tell all the far right news outlets are, you know, circling Fox News like sharks at this point? American Greatness. Published a bond. I bought some dope that was called American Greatness one time. Oh, fantastic, man. High as a kite. American Greatness. Actually, no, I do not partake in marijuana. Anywho, bombshell report reporting that multiple unidentified sources had confirmed that Noem had been having a months-long affair with Corey Lewandowski, who was former President Donald Trump's first campaign manager. Noem blasted what she called rumors while affirming her commitment to her husband. Yeah, I'm sure the husband was glad you brought him in on this. These rumors are total garbage and are a disgusting lie, Noam wrote in Twitter. These old, tired tactics on conservative women are based on a falsehood that we can't achieve anything without a man's help. I love Brian. I'm proud to be a God-fearing family we have raised together. Now I'm getting back to work. Oh, God does not want to be involved in this. Oh, I can see God. What? She's invoking me? No. Leave me out of this, Christy. I wasn't at that event. What are you bringing me into this for? So, by the way, I hope it's a lie. Christy, I hope for your sake it is. Because if anyone comes out with, like, picture of you snuggling up to the Chormaster, oh, that's going to be hard. Then comes the tearful, my husband and I are going to keep this in private and work on our issues. All right. But I'm just hoping. I'm hoping it is. I'm hoping for you. Clang, clang, clang goes the trolley. Now she's getting back to work. Is that what the kids are calling it today? Sorry. Her tweet came out the same day Lewandowski was accused by a Trump donor of making unwanted sexual advances and stalking at a Las Vegas charity event over the weekend. In a statement to Politico, Trishelle Odom alleged, is that the same Trishelle that was on the world? That's like the only other time I've ever heard the name Trishelle. Trishelle Odom alleged that the Lewandowski had repeatedly touched her inappropriately on the legs and butt while making lewd sexual comments that left her feeling violated and fearful. The 12 came days after the Associated Press reported that Noam tried to pressure the state into giving her daughter a real estate license, which is now the subject of a probe by the state attorney general. Indeed, a romantic partner has heard speculation that the forces of Noam planted the affair rumor in order to distract citizens from the payout of squelch age discrimination claim by Sherry Brent. Oh, that's interesting. It's basically there has been rumors and speculation that Noam herself planted the salacious rumor about Lewandowski to try to get the why didn't you give my princess a real estate license story from the front page. Interesting. Here, the Bluestem Prairie in Summit, South Dakota, we have no more evidence of than anyone else in the state. And instead of the speculation suggests the confidence of our fearless leaders is also at a low ebb. So we don't know what really happened. We don't know that there was no affair with Corey Lewandowski. We don't know if Christie's office maybe leaked a fake story to try to get the fact that she was trying to help her daughter out with the real estate license off the front page, because once again, in South Dakota, there's not a lot of news going on. That can linger. Subscribers to the Sioux Falls Argus Leader pays. The paper posted an Associated Press item. South Dakota Attorney General Jason Ravsberg passes Christy Noam plain inquiry to accountability board. The South Dakota Attorney General says the request from the state lawmaker to investigate Governor Noam's use of a state airplane should be handled by a board that's responsible for reviewing allegations of misconduct from state officials. Democratic Senator Reynard Nassiba of February asked the Attorney General to investigate whether Noam had violated South Dakota law by flying on the state airplane to events hosted by political organizations. Noam flew the state planes during 2019 events hosted by political organizations such as the National Rifle Association, Turning Point USA, and the Republican Jewish Coalition. Noam has defended her travel to those events as part of the role as an ambassador to the state. Is that what you said to Corey? I'm sorry. No, I have no idea what you said to Corey Lewandowski. Have no idea. I'm an ambassador for the state. Come visit the fertile plains of South Dakota. I don't know. I don't know what you can say there. Like I said, pure speculation. I make jokes. It's jokes. I have no idea what actually happened. She's always used the plane according to state law. In a letter dated Tuesday, Attorney General said he referred the request to the Government Accountability Board, so they're going to check in on that. Now, and as well, she's also getting because she's trying to adjust the social study standards and her anti-critical race theory warrior moment South Dakota Social Studies Standards Review Process will be relaunched, Governor Kristi Noem announced Friday afternoon in a press release. The standards proposed by the Department of Education will be set aside, Noem said, and she asked for the Department of Education officials to restart the process from the beginning. Everyone who has expressed concerns about the standards will be part of the process, including Native Americans, Noem said. I want to ensure we propose standards that actually reflect the values of South Dakota, she said in the statement. Our kids deserve to learn both America and South Dakota's true and honest history, taught in a balanced context that doesn't pit our children against each other on the basis of race, sex, or background. Okay. Wow. Apparently, what had happened is that they wanted to teach Native American history, and white people's like, how dare you? And Kristi Noem's like, yep, we're going to teach only whitey history. And that seems to be the case. That seems to be the case. By the way, going back to the daughter thing, she has put out a video. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem on Friday posted a video trying to explain the circumstances behind her controversial meeting she held with the head of the agency that moved to deny her daughter's application to become the certified real estate appraiser. Noem published the video days after dismissing reports by the meeting, which was prompted allegations of abuse of power. Now, once again, that's what she did. She basically accused the people that reported on this meeting of lying, making it up, just being a personal attack. Now, oh, you mean that meeting? You mean that affair? Exactly. My daughter went through the exact same process as others did in South Dakota to become an appraiser. She was treated no differently. I never asked her to get a special treatment. Well, you had a meeting. So are you saying that everyone that becomes a real estate appraiser in South Dakota has a meeting with the appraiser, the guy that makes the decision on whether they should be an appraiser, their boss and their boss's boss? Because that doesn't sound like that's a normal process. In the tweet, Noem linked the nearly 3-minute YouTube video she had filmed entitled The Facts of South Dakota's Appraiser Certification, in which she blasted speculation and innuendo in the media and that she had raised her daughter to accomplish things on her own. Sure you have. Sure you have. Get your boss and your boss's boss in my office immediately. My princess is waiting. Dear Lord, woman. I'm not buying that story. Noem did acknowledge her administration had been fixing the certification process to make it easier for people in South Dakota to become real estate appraisers because the requirements were making it way too difficult. Maybe your daughter's just an idiot. I mean, it could be that too, Kristi. Maybe your just daughter's not that brighty poo, you know? Maybe it's not the process. Maybe it's your kid who you insist is not getting any help and just went through the normal process, which apparently includes the guy who determines who becomes an appraiser, that person's boss or her boss, and her boss's boss all having a private meeting with your daughter. Appraisers aren't getting certified, and South Dakotans are having to wait much longer to buy a home than in other states, Noem said in the video. This system had been broken for decades. Oh, what a freaking load this is. It was designed to benefit those who are already certified, blah, blah, blah. The person in charge of the appraisal certification process had been at that role for 40 years. That person was Sherry Bren, the head of South Dakota. So I'm going to presume she knew what she was doing. The head of the South Dakota Department of Labor and Regulations Appraiser Certification Program, Noem, reportedly organized a meeting in her office July 27th, 2020, to discuss appraiser certification procedures, included her daughter, Cassidy Peters, Bren's superior, and South Dakota Labor Secretary Marsha Hultman. And by the way, the supervisor and Holtman are not blabbing right now. They're keeping quiet. While Noem's daughter secured her certification a few months later, in November, Bren said she was subsequently pushed to retire in a conversation with Holtman, according to an age discrimination complaint Bren eventually filed against the Department of Labor and Regulation. Bren settled with the state for $200,000 on March 31st of this year, but the department did not admit fault, and Bren agreed to not disparage in public, according to a copy of the complaint shared by the South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Bren told the Associated Press that she was presenting during the meeting with a letter from Noem's daughter's supervisor complaining about the lack of timeliness and professionalism in the certification process. The letter stated that the application for a license upgrade had been denied, but the state records reportedly show that the official's denial was never issued. When the AP first reported on the 2020 meeting, Noam slammed the media as trying to destroy my children. By the way, is there anything funnier than Christie? Let me talk about Hunter Biden, Noam, talking about how her kids are off limits. I don't know. On Wednesday, she posted two tweets that she said she had heard for years how difficult becoming an appraiser. So that's why she had to step in for her princess. That's why. It's difficult. That's why she had to do it. I'm guessing that's what she's saying. The state attorney general is looking into this as well. Noam said her administration has since made changes to streamline the licensure process, including eliminating certain exams. Oh, so the problem here isn't your stupid kid. The problem here is the exams were too tough. Oh, I get it. That's where we're at. Okay. Well, that's what it sounds like. I have no idea if that's the case. I have no idea the intelligence quotient of your daughter, but apparently you needed to step in and flex your muscle as governor to get her her license. At least that's what it sounds like. You know, yeah. Oh, 952. No, it's just a hoot. She's kind of imploding right now. She really is a Sarah Palin, isn't she? Kristi Noem, she just really is a Sarah Palin. We'll take a break. When we come on back, dancing time. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. One last quick story here. 27-year-old San Antonio, Texas man pled guilty Thursday to felony riot charges for firing more than a dozen rounds in the Minneapolis Police 3rd Precinct during the riots after George Floyd. Once again, not from Minneapolis, San Antonio, Texas. And by the way, the WCCO story doesn't include a picture of the guy who happens to be white. Funny. Wonder why. Wonder why. Once again, narrative you put out, all these people are from Minneapolis. The reality is here's yet another person from San Antonio, Texas, who came here to cause problems. The truth comes on out, but will the media report it? Of course not. 952-946-6205. To the guy who got out of his car in the drive-thru at the pharmacy, you need to dance, my friend. We're going to dance into the weekend. Native Roots Radio coming up here in just a little bit. Owl City. We'll take us to the top of the hour. You have a good weekend. We are back on a Monday. Until then, see ya.